The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
But you could get still infected and have virus in your nasopharynx, which means that even though you're vaccinated, you feel well, you could conceivably spread it to someone else. So that's the main reason for wearing the mask, even though you've been vaccinated.
But you should wear a mask because you may actually, you can still catch it from somebody, you just and spread it, you just won't get sick, you won't have symptoms.
Exactly.
Once someone's been fully vaccinated, is it a free pass? Can they loosen up on wearing masks or washing their hands?
No.
If you and a friend or you and a family member are both vaccinated, you can have dinner together wearing masks without distancing.
So you want people to wear a mask for another couple years?
No.
You've been vaccinated and you parade around in two masks for show.
No.
You're defying everything we know about immunity by telling people to wear a mask who've been vaccinated.
No. For the record, that masks are not theater. Masks are protective. And we
have immunity there, theater. If you already have immunity, you're wearing a mask to give comfort to others. You're not wearing a mask because of any science.
I totally disagree with you.
Andrew, I'm fully vaccinated. I still wear a mask. I ask my family to continue to wear a mask.
Why am I wearing the mask? Because when we're inside, it's still good policy to wear the mask. That's why.
What a miraculous flip-flop. You've got to wear the mask even if you're vaccinated. That's what they've been saying for months. Based on the science. The experts said it. So millions of Americans, millions of them, dutifully, wrap their face in cloth every day, even if vaccinated. And then yesterday, the CDC announces, I guess based on science, that you don't need a mask, not if you're vaccinated. Quite a lot to get to on today's program. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email us feedback, you can write us at td@kpcg.fm. Of course, you know about the live stream that we make available on our own website, thetrumpet.com/live. Next week, if all goes well, can't believe it's Friday, by the way, but next week, if all goes well, we'll have some big announcements about new platforms other than YouTube, Facebook, and so on, the ones that are censoring everyone, but some new platforms that'll be carrying this program. So we'll see how that rolls out. There's still some details to work out. And we've also got some news to announce next week about a special Sunday morning show or program as well. So lots to be thinking about as we go forward into this very busy, busy summer. So science does a complete flip-flop. Now the science tells us that if you've been vaccinated, if you've gotten the double jab, you're okay to take off that mask. Finally, freedom. Finally, freedom for Americans. This is the CDC director, Rachel Walensky, her announcement yesterday, clip 11.
Today, CDC is updating our guidance for fully vaccinated people. Anyone who is fully vaccinated can participate in indoor and outdoor activities, large or small, without wearing a mask or physical distancing. If you are fully vaccinated, you can start doing the things that you had stopped doing because of the pandemic. We have all longed for this moment.
Oh, yes, we've all longed for this moment. What a moment this is for the United States of America. Finally, the announcement. How many days are we into this? 420 or 30 days to stop the spread? This is where we are after 15 days to shut everything down just to stop the spread. That was last March. And now here we are. And it's not even just, okay, everyone can take off the mask. It's you can take off the mask if you've been vaccinated. In other words, The vaccination sites all across America, they're now empty. They've gotten, by applying intense pressure through the propaganda media and other sources, with all of this publicity campaign, they've gotten 30 to 40%. So now they come out with this. Now, if Fauci himself said yesterday that maybe this will provide incentive for those who haven't gotten the jab yet. We've got all of these jab centers set up across the United States, and they're now empty. They had a good run, 2-3 months, millions of Americans getting the double jab. But what can we do to get the other 50-60% that don't want to inject that poison, those toxic chemicals into their bodies? Well, maybe this. Maybe this. We'll continue to publicly shame them if they haven't gotten the vaccine. Then we'll tell them, hey, you've got no business not wearing a mask in public. And really, haven't we seen this coming? You've had the talking heads on talk radio, well, more so on the talk news, the TV news channels. But you've had the talking heads saying, look, what we should get special treatment. If we've taken the vaccine, as far as getting into restaurants, air travel, other things, why shouldn't we get special treatment? It's the ones who haven't gotten the vaccine that are putting the rest of us in danger. And of course, a few conservative commentators have said, well, hey, what's the problem? If you've gotten the vaccine, you're taken care of. You're not going to get the disease. Or it's very, very, very unlikely. And furthermore, why are you still wearing the mask if the vaccine is so, if the vaccine is like the silver bullet that just takes care of everything? Why wear the mask? You see, again, what is the latest trumpet? I've referred to this article that my father wrote, not so much on the subject here on the cover, but the one he wrote about 2 Kings 14. We went through that earlier in the week. But here's the cover of the Trumpet magazine. Jab or else. Jab or you want your freedoms? You want to return to what it was like before March of 2020? Then you better get the double jab. That's, of course, the government. How are they even going to control this or monitor this? But they're out there with the tough talk, doing still scaring, intimidating, and then falling back on, look, you can't disagree with what we say. It's the science. Really, all of this, it's theater, as Rand Paul said. It is theater. It's all for show. And what it's actually unmasking is the arrogance and the ignorance among the elites, the bureaucrats, the ruling class. And then, of course, everybody's got their own take on this. You've got the FFA or the FAA, that's the air travel. They come out with an announcement yesterday. If you're fully vaccinated, you are still required to wear a mask while at the airport or on the plane. So never mind what the CDC now says. The FAA says you got to still mask up, even if you've taken the vaccine. And then there's states like Massachusetts that says, hang on a second, don't take off that. If you live in Massachusetts, don't you take off that mask just yet. Never mind what the CDC says. Never mind what the federal government says. So you've got these authoritarians on the localized levels that are still all of these mixed messages. And some, I mean, the CDC director says, hey, this is the moment we've all been waiting for. Like we've just been on the edges of our seats waiting for her announcement. Oh, finally, what a moment. Not everyone was ecstatic, however. This is Leanna Nguyen, her tweet. I forget who she is, but in any event, I believe a doctor. She says, I'm shocked by the CDC's abrupt reversal of their guidelines for vaccinated people. While I agree that vaccinated can choose what they want to do, this only works if there's a way to check vaccination status. In other words, we've got to get those passports now. How are you going to know if they mask or unmask? And then are you just going to ask them, hey, have you been vaccinated? What a system. It says, while I agree that vaccinated can choose what they want to do, this only works if there's a way to check vaccination status. Otherwise, what's to stop the unvaccinated from endangering everyone. See, that's really who they're boxing in here. We've got to get those people. Ultimately, we've got to go after those people who are unvaccinated and who don't wear masks. They're the ones endangering the rest of us. This all started as 15 days to stop the spread. Now it's jab or else, just like the cover of the Trumpet magazine says. It is jab or else. It's not enough for them to get their vaccine and to leave everyone else alone. They've got to be a busybody and look into your life and what you're doing with respect to abortion, of course. It's never mind. You just mind your own business and let me do with my body what I will. On this point, however, everybody needs to know, hey, are you gonna jab it up? Because if you don't, you better mask it up. It's one or the other. You don't have to go back very far. You could go back almost 2 seconds ago to find statements from the experts saying exactly the opposite of what this CDC director said just yesterday. Listen to her. This is her on April 27th. That's just a little over 2 weeks ago. This is the CDC director at the last part of April, clip 14.
As we gather more and more data on the real-world efficacy of vaccines, we know that masked, fully vaccinated people can safely attend worship services inside, go to an indoor restaurant or bar, and even participate in an indoor exercise class.
Wow, you can even exercise with a few other people if you've been vaccinated and you wear a mask. Same woman, same scientist, setting up the same department, the CDC. And just 16, 17 days ago, said that if you're vaccinated, you still have to wear a mask. Why? Why wear a mask as well? Well, she explained, clip 15.
Mask use indoors will provide extra protection.
Layer, you see, extra protection. You had Mika Brzezinski on MSNBC last week saying that, you know, I think the masks have also just pretty much blotted out the flu, influenza. Wow. So really, shouldn't we? I guess if you go by that logic, if it saves one life, this should just become a permanent, I guess, a permanent part of existence for human beings. In fact, now they flip-flop and they say, okay, look, it does kind of undermine our argument about how essential the vaccine is. And so we're going to go ahead and say that you can take off the mask if you get the double jab. The exchange between Rand Paul and Fauci, that's probably the best of all. That's not even a month ago. What date is that? March 18th? So less than a month. And Fauci was agitated. I disagree with you. Who are you to say it's theater? This is not a show. This is science. This is science, what we're promoting here. The standards that we're upholding. This is what the experts say. And of course, Fauci is the chief among chiefs. The chiefest of all experts. America's most famous doctor. The federal government's highest paid employee. Here's what he said on March 18th, or this is that exchange between him and Senator Paul, clip 16.
You're telling everybody to wear a mask, whether they've had an infection or a vaccine. What I'm saying is they have immunity, and everybody agrees they have immunity. What studies do you have that people that have had the vaccine or have had the infection are spreading the infection? If we're not spreading the infection, isn't it just theater?
No, it's not.
The vaccine and you're wearing two masks. Isn't that theater?
No, that's not. Here we go again with the theater. Let's get down to the facts.
Yeah, just the facts. You see, this is not theater. Let me give to you some facts. And he went on to lecture Rand Paul about the variants. Remember this? We played this for you, I know, a few weeks ago. But he went on to lecture him and the rest of America about there's COVID-19, but look, there's the many strains and different variants that come along with it. And the vaccine, remember when they said the vaccine would maybe be good for about 6 months? And then you need the booster shot? The arrogance, as I say, the arrogance and the ignorance, it's on display every day. If you don't have the Word of God as the foundation of all knowledge, just consider what it says in Hebrews 13 and Malachi 3 about God being the same yesterday, today, forever, or the verse that says, I change not. What a wonderful government that will be in the wonderful world of tomorrow, in God's kingdom, soon to be set up on this earth. And you compare it to this, the governments of men, changing all the time, changing the standards, making a little value adjustment. The talking heads are pushing for, look, well, shouldn't I have more privileges? I've taken the vaccine. And sure enough, here comes the CDC and says, you know what? You are more special because you've injected those toxins into your body. And so you're going to be able to take off the mask. What a system. Listen to this exchange again from March 18th, clip 17.
The other thing is that when you talk about reinfection and you don't keep in the concept of variants, that's an entirely different ball game. That's a good reason for a mask.
What study shows significant reinfection, hospitalization, and death after either natural infection or the vaccine? It doesn't exist.
You're not hearing what I'm saying about variants. We're talking about wild type versus variants.
And what, now, proof is there that there are significant reinfections with hospitalizations and death from the variants? None in our country. Zero.
Well, because we don't have a prevalent of a variant yet. We're having one. Can I finish? We're having 117 that's becoming more dominant.
Policy based on conjecture.
You're making policy based on conjecture. In other words, what you think might happen. It's not based on science at all. That's him. That's Senator Paul holding him to account. What are you basing this on? This was less than a month ago when Fauci was saying you must get vaccinated and wear the mask. And Senator Paul said the science doesn't support this. He said, well, you don't understand. You don't understand about what could happen with a variant. Are we basing this on conjecture then? Indeed they were and are. They still are. They're just making it up as they go. And it all makes for good theater. It really and truly does. Day in and day out. It's just hilarious to me. You have a big announcement like yesterday. She celebrates it, the CDC woman. She says, hey, this is the moment we've all been waiting for. And yet says nothing about how she's flat out contradicted herself. And then Fauci, for his part, he gets up yesterday. He's on the news. He's excited. He says, hey, this could provide incentive for those who haven't gotten the vaccine yet. You know, there was a story a few days ago. We didn't have time to get to it. It's been on the back end of our notes the last few shows. But this revelation about how Fauci signed off on funding that Wuhan lab from which came the coronavirus, the China flu. He funded it. Or at least he approved of it. Senator Paul, for his part, he called him out for that as well. And then said a couple days ago that Fauci may well be culpable for the pandemic. I mean, that is scandalous. If you really want to delve into the science and root causes, where did this begin? And more evidence just pours in that it not only came from that lab, but it wasn't an accident. And you would think the propaganda media, you'd think they would be interested in something such as this. As it is, they still trot out Fauci. Doesn't matter how much he contradicts himself. He, like I read to you the other day, the New York Times says he's nearly perfect. He's been on more than 300 talk shows over the last year, or he's made 300 appearances. And it continues. It continues right through to today. Pretty amazing. Well, here's Joe Biden for his part, the fake president. He responded to the CDC woman who says that this is a moment. This is something to celebrate. And so here's the fake president trying to, I guess, bring clarity to the CDC announcement. Clip one.
I want to be clear. The CDC is saying they have concluded that fully vaccinated people are at a very, very low risk of getting COVID-19. Therefore, if you've been fully vaccinated, you no longer need to wear a mask. But if you've not been vaccinated, or if you're getting a two-shot vaccine and you've not gotten your, you only had your first shot, but not your second, or you haven't waited the full 2 weeks after your second shot, you still need to wear a mask.
So there you go. Clear as day, right? Somehow or another, if you're in that middle ground area, I guess you still need to wait. Still, just wear the mask. But in any event, this is good news. This is the moment. The moment that we've been waiting for. Later on in the day, here's the fake president boiling it down basically to the two choices that Americans have. Clip 12.
It's vaxxed or masked. Get vaccinated.
Vaxxed or mask. And of course, his preference being the vaccine. He clarified it yet further in an announcement sent out by the White House last night, clip 13.
It's vaxxed or masked.
Vaxxed or masked, you got to do one of the two. If you reject both, well, you're a danger. You might even be guilty of murder. You've heard those clips. We've played them on this program. The control, the power, just the hunger for power and control over you. Just ordinary Americans carrying on with your life. Have we ever seen leaders in the United States this obsessed with amassing power and control over the whole of the United States? Well, the U.S. isn't alone. This is from The Telegraph on Sunday. And this was a title on the front page of the Sunday Telegraph. Hugging family and friends allowed from next week, the prime minister says. So he's decided. The conservative, quote unquote, in the Great Britain, the greatest empire to ever rule the earth, or at least much of it. What a fall from power and glory. Little England, front page of the Telegraph. You would think it's the Babylon Bee, but the thing of it is, it's not the Babylon Bee. This is the Daily Telegraph. Listen to this. It says, hugging friends and relatives will now be allowed from next week as long as people use their common sense. Boris Johnson will say tomorrow, Mr. Johnson is likely to say that everyone should use their personal judgment and their common sense when it comes to hugging friends and family after May 17. Okay, so where are we? We're at May 14. So before May 17, the science, no hugs, friends, relatives, stay away. May 17th, though, then you can hug them. It's all science. It's all based on the science. How could this journalist write this next line without laughing out loud at his desk? He says, the news will be a relief for millions of people who have not hugged anyone for months due to lockdown measures. He's there typing along at his computer, I suppose. Oh, this is going to be great news. What a moment. What a moment for people in England. They can finally hug their relatives. After months of no physical contact. Well, except for the experts. The experts like, what was the guy's name last April or May? He's telling everybody to stay in their basement. And then he's off with his lover across the other side of London. Getting in a fair bit of physical intimacy, I would imagine. No hugs for grandma, though. No hugging the grandchildren. This is not the Babylon Bee. I got this story on Sunday and I just shook my head and thought, well, is it even worth getting into? Then you hear these announcements, vaxxed or masked. It's one of the two. This is leadership in Israel today. Listen to this. The prime minister will also confirm changes set out last week that care home residents in England can now go on low-risk trips, such as to relatives' gardens or a local park without having to self-isolate for 14 days when they return. I didn't even know this was a policy. If you're in a care home and you want to go to a park or a garden, fine. But then you've got to self-isolate for 14 days after that. It's the science. Don't you know that? It's the science. That's what we're learning from science. It's unbelievable. Go ahead and laugh if you like. It's kind of upsetting to me, but I was laughing this morning when I was preparing it. I think the CDC has announced that it's okay to laugh at this point. Maybe we'll have to wait to May 17. We'll see. But it's laughable and also somewhat painful. What, as someone wrote to me earlier this week, look at how far we've fallen. Are other nations, I know it's been a global pandemic, but are other nations carrying on this way? As I've said before, what's going on in China right now? Or Brazil, or Malaysia, or Eastern European nations, Poland? Are they going through this every day? The big announcement, oh, this is the moment we can celebrate. You can finally strip off the mask, only if you've been vaccinated. Well, as I say, the president was there, the fake president. He was there trying to bring clarity, to add clarity to the flip-flopping, the back and forth. Yesterday, by the way, he also talked a bit about the gas shortage in the Southeast and he tried to calm the fears of drivers along the East Coast. He said this, clip two.
Now, here's what drives the driver in the states that are affected. Here's what that you can do, the drivers. Don't panic, number one.
Okay, don't panic. He says this as people are lining up trying to buy fuel at these gas stations that are out of fuel. Don't panic. Just carry on. This is a very strange story, by the way. The company, Colonial Pipeline, they've since paid this ransom to these Russian hackers. The U.S. government basically has said, well, we don't really know if Russia's, you know, the state of Russia is totally behind it. And the fake president yesterday just talked about maybe a little slap on the wrist. He's not even going to do anything following this attack coming from abroad to try to shut down the energy grid in the United States. Instead, the radical left used this as a pretext to push their Green New Deal program, to push all of these infrastructure programs, trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. It makes you wonder if they're part of this plot. If not, they're certainly seemingly happy that it's happened. Well, this just gives us another excuse to ram our radical leftist programs right down the throat of America. He was asked yesterday, the fake president, he was asked by a reporter, well, did you know about this ransom and the fact that this company actually paid $5 million in ransom? Here's how he responded, clip three.
It was somewhere on the ransom. Were you briefed on the fact that the company did pay the ransom?
I have no comment on that. Thank you.
And then the reporters, I should have played the rest of it. Then the reporters, just very respectful, okay, you don't want to comment on that. Remember when they just shouted down Donald Trump and the press secretary for Donald Trump? Scream! In some cases, they would scream. I'm not going to comment on that. And he slowly turns around and slowly walks out of the room and no one says a word. What a strange story, indeed. And yet the press doesn't seem like they're really that interested. Just scratch the surface like per usual, and tell Americans that, you know, hacks like these, it's just going to be a way of life. There's just hackers all over the world, and we're going to have to prepare for having the energy grids shut down. That's why we need to go to solar power or wind power. We can't be so dependent on oil. It's just too easy for the hackers to get in there and to shut the whole pipeline down. Now, they can't get into voting machines. Don't worry. Don't take it too far. Come on now. The voting machines are secure. Dominion says so. Dominion says everything's working perfect. And so did Chris Krebs. So did everyone with cybersecurity in the U.S. government. Voting machines secure. Pipelines across the eastern seaboard, not as much. Very vulnerable. We've got to get more cybersecurity experts educated. This is the news. Speaking of the voter fraud, the obvious voter fraud. Listen to what Stacey Abrams said about the forensic audit going on in Arizona. Clip 10.
Given all your work on voting rights, when you see this so-called audit in Arizona with cell phone jammers and UV lights and conspiracy theories about bamboo ballots brought in from Asia, what is happening there?
It's a continuation of the big lie, but more importantly and more concerningly, it's a continuation of the insurrection.
Wow, it's an insurrection? To recount the votes? This comes from the woman who still hasn't conceded her loss in 2018 in that Georgia gubernatorial race. She still hasn't admitted she lost. She thinks she won. And so here comes the state of Arizona. They're finding all of these irregularities. They're not even getting the machines, the hardware turned over. They're about to issue out subpoenas on Monday. And this woman has the audacity to say this is an insurrection. It's just a continuation of the insurrection. And of course, it started on January 6th, blah, 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 blah. We've heard all of that. This story out of Maricopa County from the National Pulse. This made a few headlines in a few obscure conservative sites yesterday. But like I said yesterday, Fox News and all of them, they're just steering clear of this story. Won't even touch it. The National Pulse says here, political strategist Boris Epstein adds that the discrepancies may be as high as 17.5%. And it's likely Joe Biden did not win Arizona. Let me back up. It says the ongoing audit of ballots cast in Maricopa County, Arizona, has uncovered significant discrepancies in the number of ballots versus the supposed number of ballots that were supposed to exist. So they get these boxes of ballots, and there's a little sheet, I guess, associated with it that say, this is how many ballots are inside this box. Then they're looking into the box and they're seeing, well, in some cases, it's 5, 10, even 17% off. What a discrepancy. Now, that's an irregularity, if ever there was one. And in a state that Joe Biden won, supposedly, by 10,000, well, I'd say it's worth looking into that 2.1 million. Yet Stacey Abrams says to do that. Well, if you do it, you must be an insurrectionist. You must be following after Donald Trump's big lie that this election was somehow rigged or stolen. This is from Tucson.com. Senate Republican leaders are setting the stage for a new legal fight with Maricopa County. Corey Langhofer, the attorney for the Senate, said he will be issuing subpoenas Monday for all five Maricopa County supervisors, demanding they appear to explain why they won't surrender certain equipment and information for review as part of the audit of the 2020 general election means. Langhofer also said the Senate wants to hear from Scott Jarrett, the county's director of Election Day and emergency voting, but that just may be part of it. The Senate also may subpoena Maricopa County Sheriff Paul Pinzone. He's the one that says you can't turn over those machines. It's a security risk. So the sheriff is in on it. The election officials, they want to subpoena all of them. So as I say, there is some fight, some backbone in these Senate Republicans in Arizona. It says, but Fan said that the company she hired needs two other things to complete its work. One is a list of passwords to some of the counting equipment that was located at polling centers. Dominion, remember the county officials had one password, Dominion had the other. Dominion won't turn those over. I'll get to their statement here in just a second. It says, a bigger fight, however, surrounds the routers. These are the devices the county uses to funnel computer traffic among its computers. The routers themselves contain no information on what was transmitted or received, but what they would show are the unique IP addresses for any traffic both sent and received, and that could answer the allegation that someone somehow electronically injected extra votes for Joe Biden into the results. The routers could show, it could finally lay this to rest. If it's a conspiracy, then hand over the routers and let's see about the IP addresses and the traffic. But they don't want to give up the routers. Why? What are you worrying about? What's there to hide? It was a perfect election. This is the statement from Dominion. Just yesterday, it says Dominion voluntarily provides access to voting machine equipment and information to auditors who have been accredited by the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. In other words, Dominion says, yeah, we'll turn things over, but only to something accredited by the U.S. government. In this case, though, they can't turn it over in good faith. Too dangerous. There's too many biased actors involved in this audit. Says we happily did so with the independent EAC accredited providers that Maricopa County hired for system auditing earlier this year. See, the earlier audit, which wasn't really an audit, we were happy to comply with their needs because we knew they were just going to kind of scratch the surface and everything would be A-OK, just perfect. Never. When the election officials audit or evaluate their own work, the conclusion always is that it was perfect. We did a perfect job. Why should you get a third party to come in and check out our work? That's not right. That's insurrection. It says here, if Cyber Ninjas went through the process of successfully obtaining accreditation, Dominion would, of course, cooperate. It says, however, not only is Cyber Ninjas unaccredited, but they've also already demonstrated bias and incompetence, including committing a serious breach of the secure chain of custody. It says further on, releasing Dominion's intellectual property to an unaccredited, biased, and plainly unreliable actor such as Cyber Ninjas would be reckless, causing irreparable damage to the commercial interests of the company. So we can't do it. We just can't do it, says Dominion. We can't turn over these passwords. We can't let you examine our work. Certainly not if it's this group from Florida. We certainly can't allow that to happen. To which the Senate Republicans are replying, hey, what's the problem? What are you so worried about? What are you trying to hide? They're trying to hide massive fraud on a grand scale, not just in Arizona, in every single one of those swing states and beyond. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Send us some feedback, td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Most of you are familiar with the prophecy in Ezekiel 33, the very last verse in that chapter, which says about the people of Israel, that after all of these prophecies come to pass, then they'll know, after the fact, that there was a prophet among them. In other words, they didn't heed the prophetic warning before the prophecies were fulfilled, but they knew all about that prophet of God after the fact. What does this tell you about the role of a prophet? There are quite a few of them in the Bible. Ezekiel, of course, is one of them. My father said this in the Ezekiel, the End Time Prophet booklet. He said, I don't believe there is a single instance in the Bible where God sent a prophet to say, hey, you're all doing great. You're all doing great. He says, the fact that there is a prophet on the scene shows correction is necessary. That's why God sends one to warn. He doesn't send a prophet, generally speaking. And, well, my father says he doesn't know of one instance where God sent the prophet and said to the prophet, now you tell the people they're doing great. Everything's working perfect. God sends his servants to warn of coming calamity, of coming correction from God. Isaiah is another prophet of God. You're familiar with his work if you've read through any of his content in the book of Isaiah. He lived a relatively long life, 90 years of age or so. He lived during the reigns of five kings in Judah, Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, Hezekiah, and Manasseh, and some of his contemporaries, Jonah, Amos, Hosea, Micah. These were some of the other prophets of God who were around at the time of Isaiah's ministry. Lived to be about 90, as I said. Started prophesying when he was about 20. I mean, there's examples of prophets starting even earlier, like Jeremiah. He was 15 or 16. Samuel the prophet, he started at, I think, 13 years of age. So I guess in some ways, this is a little bit of a later start, but still, a 20-year-old receiving a message from God and then having the courage and the faith to go and deliver that warning to the people of Israel. Isaiah 6, notice this, Isaiah 6 and verse 1, it says, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Eternal sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. So this is probably, it's not the beginning of Isaiah's writings, obviously, but it may have been what's discussed here in chapter 6. This may have been when God brought him into that office of prophet. And this vision in Isaiah 6, this really was a transformative event in the young prophet's life. He saw the Eternal sitting on a throne. He saw God on his throne, this magnificent being who later became Jesus Christ, or came in the flesh as Jesus Christ, God in the flesh. Verse 2 says, above it stood the seraphims. Each one had six wings. With twain he covered his face, and with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly, and one cried unto the other and said, holy, holy, holy is the Eternal of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. The whole earth. This is what he saw in vision. And of course, when you project ahead and you think about the prophecies of God, the hundreds and hundreds of prophecies that discuss the wonderful world of tomorrow, that is to fill this earth in which there's so much turmoil and violence and division and strife and hatred and suffering and variance. Imagine a time when God's glory fills the whole earth. Jesus Christ is about to return to this earth to do just that, to fill this earth with glory, God's glory. Verse 4, it says, and the posts of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and the house was filled with smoke. And then said I, woe is me, for I am undone, because I'm a man of unclean lips. This is Isaiah talking. I'm of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. So here is this young prophet, and he says, look, my people are unclean, but so am I. So am I. I'm unclean and impure. He saw his own sins. The word unclean, by the way, in Hebrew, it means foul in a religious sense, defiled, infamous, or polluted. And really, that's how we all come before God. Read about our baptismal conversion or covenant in Romans 6. Well, study right through Romans 6, 7, and 8 sometime. We all come out of a filthy past when we come out of this world, when we forsake the ways of this world, and when we, with God's help, clean up our lives and follow in the steps of Christ and become perfect, ultimately, perfect, like our Father in heaven is perfect, Matthew 5 and verse 48. So here's Isaiah talking about the filth and the worldliness that he forsook. Verse 6, it says, "Then flew one of the seraphims unto me, having a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with the tongs from off the altar, and he laid it upon my mouth and said, Lo, this has touched your lips, and your iniquity is taken away, and your sin is purged." And so before he could do a service for God, before he could fulfill God's will, he had to be purged first himself. That's the same with all of us. We all need to be purged of our sins. And then we can go and perform great works for God. That doesn't mean we're perfect at the point of baptism or the moment of our conversion to the truth. It is a process. It is a fight, a battle. Romans 7 brings that out. But here is a prophet of God confronting his own sins first, and then God used him to go and confront the sins of his people. Verse 8, it says, "Also I heard the voice of the Eternal saying, Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? And then said I, Here am I, send me. Send me." I mean, this is verse 8, but just a few verses earlier, he says, "Woe! Woe is me, I'm undone, I'm unclean, I don't deserve this." How many times do you see this in the Bible? Moses, remember, protested saying, I stutter, I'm not qualified for a position such as this. The Apostle Paul, well, God, I've persecuted Christians, I've hindered your work. We're all unclean. In verse 5, he didn't really want to go. Here in verse 8, he says to God, "Here I am, send me." What a turnaround. What a turnaround. This shows that if we're purged of our sins, then we can actually go forward and serve God with boldness and courage. That's a very encouraging message. Verse 9, it says, "And he said to me, Go and tell this people, Hear you indeed, but understand not, and see you indeed, but perceive not. It says, Make the heart of this people fat, and make their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and convert, and be healed." This is a revealing passage as well. This is generally, like my father said in that Ezekiel booklet quote that I gave you at the top of the segment, God sends the prophet because there are problems. He sends a prophet to warn. And as it says here in verse 10, I mean, this is nearly always the way people respond or react to a warning from a true prophet of God. They don't understand it. They're not going to change their behavior because of the prophetic warning. They're just going to continue on with their sinful living. And in some cases, the message even enrages people. It enrages the authorities. Look at what it did in the first century with those who opposed the ministry of Jesus Christ. They went after him. They persecuted him. They wanted to kill him. They did eventually kill him. This was not a well-received message, the gospel of the kingdom of God that Jesus proclaimed during his 3.5-year ministry. Mankind rejected it. They rejected him. They crucified him. Well, we all did, didn't we? We all had a hand in it. We all came out of a pretty filthy existence before coming to God in order to be cleaned up. Verse 11, it says, "Then said I, Lord, how long? And he answered, until the cities be wasted without inhabitant, and the houses without man, and the land be utterly destroyed." Now, this didn't happen in Isaiah's time, and so you can see elsewhere in this book, I'll show you in just a second, that it's for our time today. It's for the last days. He prophesies here in the last part of this chapter about the coming destruction on our cities. I'll leave it to you to read verses 12 and 13, but notice Isaiah 30. This is the middle of the book. Isaiah 30 in verse 8, where it says this, "Now go," this is God's instruction to his prophet Isaiah. He says, "Go, write it before them in a table and note it in a book, that it may be for the time to come forever and ever." Write this down, Isaiah. Put it in a book. Put it in a manuscript. Put it on parchment. It needs to be preserved because it's for the latter days. It needs to be preserved and canonized in the holy book because it's for the last days. It's for our time today. My father writes in the Isaiah End Time booklet, the Isaiah's End Time Vision, I should say. So what is the main reason the book of Isaiah was put in the Bible? It says because it was a message for the end time, for today, right now. It's for right now. He says the Jameson Fawcett Brown commentary writes this about verse 8, "A parchment roll containing the prophecy in full for the use of distant posterity, specifically for the latter day." It says here, "The book of Isaiah will have been written in vain if we fail to understand that it is for us today." It's for us. We can thank God that Isaiah, throughout this faithful ministry of his, 70-some years, that he wrote it down, that he recorded it in a book. It's there, as Paul said in 1 Corinthians 10, it's there for our learning and understanding. It's there for a warning for us. Notice Isaiah 41 and verse 22. It says here, "Let them bring them forth and show us what shall happen. Let them show the former things what they be, that we may consider them and know the latter end of them, or declare us things to come." So there's, as my father's explained before, there's a former and a latter end. And you study into this book, the book of Isaiah, he uses the phrase "in that day" 50 times. There's just the 66 chapters, but 50 times over and again, over and over and over. He says, "in that day," in that day. In other words, in the future, far into the future. So much of Bible prophecy, and there's a lot of it in the Bible. A third of your Bible is prophecy, and most of it is for the last days. There's also a lot to say about duality. We'll have to save that for another program. The fact that there was a fulfillment on a smaller level back in the time of their writings. And then there's a fulfillment in the last days. In some cases, though, there wasn't even a former fulfillment. Some of the prophets wrote about Israel's demise after Israel had already fallen and been taken into captivity. As I say, we'll have to save that for another study. One last quote here from Isaiah's End Time Vision. It says here, "Isaiah's prophecy was twofold. He warned the temple priests and the people of Israel, and the same is true for the end time." There's a warning. There's a warning for the ministry and God's people, and there's also a warning today contained in this book, this prophetic book. There's also a warning today for our nations, and we refer to so many chapters in this book often. Isaiah 1 about the sickness, Isaiah 3 about the upside-down world we're in, or the upside down family, the destruction of the family. Isaiah 5 talks about how upside down it all is. We've gone through a little bit of Isaiah 6 here today in our study, and hopefully next week we can take some time to cover other sections from this powerful prophetic warning contained in the book of Isaiah. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Write us, td@kpcg.fm. And thank you. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us all week, and we'll see you next week.